go explain evolution to the monkeys.
God damn you all!
Welcome back, all you space apes, to a new episode of Cinema de More. I'm Justin Morgan. I'm here with
Chuck Phillips.
And we are talking about Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. I watched the unrated version, the director's cut, and realized since I got the Blu-ray set maybe 10 years ago or whenever the hell it came out, that is the only version of this film that I have ever watched, which is apparently bloodier, more violent.
Yeah, and also just has a darker ending than the regular cut. The regular cut, they don't kill the governor. They let him go and talk about being benevolent rulers.
How these movies have been received, as far as I know, everyone seems to put Escape pretty high in the original. Like, at least Escape's the highest sequel. And I really like Conquest, but I don't know if it's because I've just exclusively watched this version. The production value drops for each movie, but I don't mind it. I think the concept is really good and works a lot better when it's put into play in Rise. But for this movie by itself, I think that it's done pretty well. It kind of, I don't want to say it switches the subgenre like the Alien films do, but each film seems to have almost a completely different plot going on for these sequels, which is nice.
Yeah, we got that. This is probably the darkest film of all of them. Like, the last one had a very dark ending, and this just keeps continuing to being a very kind of dark and depressing movie that I think works really well. And I think probably the thing that stands out the most for me is Roddy McDowall obviously comes back as Caesar this time, so he's playing his own child. But it's interesting the way that he doesn't just do a version of Cornelius. He's not just playing, like, I guess it would be very easy for an actor to just play the same character again, just, oh, he's your child, like, you can basically play him as the same, just like a younger version. But I feel like he really incorporates elements of the two previous characters. He does Cornelius and Zira a little bit, because he definitely seems to have like that pragmatic approach that Cornelius has when it comes to things. Like, he really like takes his time to, you know, he doesn't rush into any situations, but he also at the same time does sometimes seem like he's a little got too much of Zira in that, you know, when he screams out, "Damn you human bastards," or whatever he says, like, that's definitely something that Cornelius would never do. That's more of a Zira trait, to just, like, he can't hold his emotions in it, seeing something, some kind of injustice happen. And also the way that they give everyone the tasks, and you would think if Cornelius were in the same situation, he would purposely try to be bad at the tasks to blend in with the rest of them, but it's almost like he can't help himself. He still does the tasks better than everyone around him, so he, like, makes himself more noticeable than he really should. He doesn't think about that. He just thinks, like, oh, well, I'll be better than these dumb apes. I'll show them that I'm pretty smart, and they'll notice me, and I'll move up somewhere.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know if the mannerisms were designed to be a combination of two. Definitely in the screenplay, he's his own character. But Roddy McDowall does a great job at making this Caesar seem completely different than Cornelius. The voice doesn't sound the same. The mannerisms are completely different. As for the character itself being more of a attention freak, it again also makes sense for him being in the circus. What was his he was the only, he could ride a horse or some shit like that.
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't even think it comes into play, but they talk about how he can ride bareback on a horse, which is obviously a nod to the very first time that you see the apes in the very first movie. But I was expecting him to get on a horse. Somebody be like, oh God, they're on horses now. We do transition from, it is 1973 when Escape takes place, and now it's 1991 where he's grown up. But all the gorillas, or I guess not just the gorillas, the orangutans and the chimpanzees, they all now have that Planet of the Apes look. They look like the people did in that movie, which, I mean, up until that point, I always assumed that it was because 2,000 years have passed, so that's what they evolved into. And I could understand him growing up to look like that, but not so much every chimp. I feel like that's where the, you know, some of the design suffers a little bit. I do like the idea where they bring back in this plague that wiped out all cats and dogs, so naturally chimps became the next pet.
Yeah, it's an interesting the way they play they brought this up in the behind the scenes, like the way they'd go about. They filmed it in Century City, which I know is like where they where they filmed like the Nakatomi Plaza, I think, is in that same where it was later constructed on that same lot, because it has that very futuristic. All the buildings are just like big black like monolithic buildings. They're just there's nothing like ornately nice looking in there. So they were like, that's a great place. That's a great place to film a future dystopia. Which my first thought was, oh, so the place that like people work for 20th Century Fox looks like that. I'm like, oh, that's a great place to go to work every day. Looks horrendous. But I think it's interesting the way they play everybody. Like all the human characters wear black pretty much all the time. That's their whole outfit. And for whatever reason, the chimps are the only ones that have any like color or personality. The gorillas wear red. I think the orangutans wear yellow, and then the chimps wear green. So they're like kind of getting towards their what they'll eventually wear later on in the series. But
so if you can't tell the difference between the type of ape they are, as long as you're not colorblind, you're golden.
Yeah. If you're colorblind, you might get confused. You might not know who's who.
There's apparently, it seems like Cornelius and Zira were sort of a myth, which doesn't make 100% sense because they seem to be in the spotlight in 73 where they were on the news and everybody knew about them, taking pictures of them and stuff. And they know that they died, but they really think that there's just not enough explanation as to what they were. I'm not entirely sure on where they're going with that, but they keep talking about the apes speaking, and finally Caesar does speak, which it's that line that gets knocked off at least four times in the series, which is like a riff off of Charlton Heston's line. But yeah, I really like the society that they built, where just in a couple years, they went straight into basically doing all the jobs, all the labor for everybody. And they really, really push that slave element. Well, the character of McDonald in Conquest, it does a really good job of showcasing the whole slavery idea, which is it's kind of crazy because for the most part, all the humans that they show are mostly white. I don't see very many humans of color at all in this movie. And slavery is really, really, really strong how they're using these apes. And obviously McDonald has these feelings towards it and, you know, the history. And it's just kind of weird because he's not really allowed to speak up about how he feels about these sort of. So the few times that he has a chance to change or have some sort of action, he always does something for the better, which I think is pretty, pretty cool. But also I feel like Fox didn't want to push that message. So maybe it falls more in line of the Twilight Zone episode, like the original Twilight Zone, where they chose to be slightly more subtle about what they were feeling with slavery. They're like, we don't want to have this discussion quite yet.
Yeah, I would say that's definitely what they went with, using the apes to kind of tell that story. That, I mean, even in the, yeah, this would have still been 1970. Yeah, this would have been 1973 still, even though it takes place in 1991, but it was released in 73. So you're still like pretty close, like right after civil rights movement and all that kind of stuff. So you're still like kind of in that general time frame. And yeah, I agree. It's probably the same thing of no one wanted to make a movie like that. That's like going with those kind of issues, but you do it with apes and they kind of let you go with it. And that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when we see McDonald kind of helping Caesar frequently. And it kind of, at first it's almost, you're not sure. They don't play it immediately that he's necessarily an ally. He seems to be a better person than the rest. Like he's always pushing for, oh, are we sure that, you know, that's what we need to do? Like, I think we can let these apes go. We don't need to kill them or something like that. So he's always kind of working that way. But in the end, when they discover that Caesar is the one that they've been looking for, the one that can talk, he has that great moment where he like lets him overhear the conversation and says, oh no, I've sent Caesar on a mission. I'll tell him to send him over when he gets back. And he kind of just lets him escape from that point. And then when they meet in the hallway and he kind of says like, oh, what are you going to try to start a revolution? And he's like, yeah, it's the only way we can do it. And the way he says, when he tells McDonald, like, you of all people should be the ones to truly understand how this feels. So I agree with you that it's definitely like a Twilight Zone level of dealing with that issue, but by portraying it in people in ape suits, it kind of like the execs don't necessarily notice that that's necessarily what you're going for or see that. And they're like, oh yeah, it's monkeys. It's fine.
Right. Aren't you uncomfortable to be a slaver, essentially? Yeah. He does McDonald in the beginning has that vibe of he speaks up for himself, but would he stand in a situation that was morally wrong? It almost seems like he might be sticking with the main villain throughout the whole picture. But yeah, that moment where he's kind of standing up for Caesar, and then Caesar comes out and says, "I'm the one that you're looking for." You kind of have that aha moment where he's like, "Oh, they do speak." And I love when he picks up the phone that's cordless. I'm like, "Oh, the future. A phone not on a cord." I mean, they were kind of right. It was just a phone with the cord taken.
It was literally a phone that they took the cord out of.
I wonder how many times he went to hang it up and it just fell off onto the floor. But yeah, I thought that was I really like that idea. And the hardest thing to watch was probably when they were auctioning them off, because it was 100% replicating the actual slave sales that they had in the South. Where and then like there's this crazy bidding war for Caesar because he picked up the chains that were dropped, and I mean, I don't know if it's the smartest thing, but everybody was very impressed by Caesar. They were all bidding for him, and it's kind of weird too, because I do like the subtlety with Roddy McDowall a lot better than anything Charlton Heston did in the first movie, even though I would say the first movie clearly has all the better ideas, thanks to Mr. Rod Serling. But I love when they bet on him, and they bid on him, and they win, and he just has that like subtle glance up over at the guy who's like on the balcony, like any king or emperor that you'd see in any movie. You don't wonder how I'm almost surprised he doesn't have binoculars. He just has good vision. He can see that far away.
He can see what's going on from a distance. He knows what's going on. He's got super vision, I'm sure. Yeah, I like the scene that follows that when Caesar chooses his own name, which I don't even know what book he hands Caesar. That I can't remember what they were saying. They were calling him before or something like that. And he's like, "Oh, let's let him choose his own name." And Caesar like flips through like two pages and immediately just points to Caesar. And I'm like, what book?
I'm assuming it's a book of names.
Is it just Julius Caesar? Yeah, I'm like, what is it?
That'd be good if it's just Shakespeare, but I assume because of the, I forget, what's that villain's name? He says, "Oh, a king." Like, he knows what it means. So I kind of felt that it a book of maybe the boys' names or something, like for naming children. And then I'm assuming right next to Caesar, it had the definition. So he could be like, "Oh, so you think you're a king, Caesar?" Not that he knew off the top of his head. It'd be funny, though, if he pointed and then he said the wrong name and he said, "No, this name right here. Sorry, my finger was off slightly." But he does do the dumb thing occasionally where they're teaching him how to pour drinks. What were they talking about reconditioning him? And they're like, it doesn't work. You can't just keep reconditioning them every time they make a mistake. And I like a lot of the other apes. I like the ape that is the waiter ape that's afraid of fire. And he's working at like a hibachi. Well, anytime that there's a big flame, he gets scared. Yeah. So maybe that's not the ideal job for him.
Was that the ape that always lights the cigarettes, and then that's his big moment. Gorilla. She's like, "Come on, light my cigarette," and he just won't do it. Throws the lighter at her or whatever.
That's another moment of the time that I really love, when Caesar starts to rebel, and they do a good job of doing it as like a subtle uprising, but it's these shots of these apes doing their jobs, like the guy, the one that's doing the shoe shining, and he's shining his shoes, and he looks over at Caesar, and it has to
zoom in on Caesar's face.
It zooms in on his face,
and he nods real subtly.
Yeah, he's like, "Do it." Yeah, his face is just like, "Do it." Yeah. And then he starts getting the shoe shine crap on his socks.
That's that whole part, the whole like montage of him building the uprising is great. And I love the plan of getting all the apes together in some like underground like warehouse or something like that, and then they bring the shopping list that their masters have given them, and it's something stupid like one pair of hedge clippers, and he just like adds like, "And 5 gallons of gasoline," and then like hands it back to him. It's like, "Go get that." Like people just start looking at their receipts.
I need a handgun and 100 rounds of ammunition.
Yeah, all that stuff's great when he keeps like just adding things on. I would just love to see that's how the ape rebellion goes down, as everyone starts checking their receipts. It's like, "Whoa, why do you charge like $50 for hedge clippers? You bought 5 gallons of gas." "No, I didn't." "Oh, that ape, he did something."
Maybe they're just assuming they're so rich they're not really looking other books. There's one that hands him like a banana or something. What do they hand them? Something stupid, and he's just like, "Come on."
I think someone does hand him like a, or I think I don't know if it's a banana or I think he hands him like some sort of kitchen tool, like tongs or something like that. It is like something like dumb that it's like, and he just kind of like sits it off to the side, like, good job, buddy. You tried.
Yeah. And then he looks at his, when he walks away all proud, he looks at the other apes like, nah, this guy's dumb. Yeah, I think that it's good. They have like, they add a lot more weird sci-fi stuff to it. It definitely has these strong 1984 dystopian vibes, which don't really feel that way in any of the other movies, at least. They don't feel like they're in a prison because they treat the humans in the first movie like cattle. And then in the third movie, they kind of treat the apes like kind of a scientific anomaly or something. And in this one, it's just, it's straight up, we're controlling you and we got the batons, all kind of shit. I think the movie works well, too, where you just kind of feel that Caesar, that these apes kind of respect Caesar, and they, maybe not as smart, but they listen to him. They don't really have any sort of explanation why they follow him. I mean, they might be feeling unjust, but he's obviously the way smarter ape, and they don't convey that in, like, the greatest of ways. When they sort of, like, pseudo-remake this in Rise, they do a good job using, like, the chemical that, like, awakens or makes the apes more intelligent, which I think fits nicely. But this is okay. This is kind of like one of those Jurassic Park plot holes where you ignore it. You just say, yeah, I guess so. I guess these apes would put their lives in harm's way for something they don't understand at all.
Oh yeah, and they definitely put their lives in harm's way. That that final battle, that sequence of just them like burning down the entire city is pretty great. It does. I think I would agree with you. I don't think I've ever watched just the theatrical cut. I think the version I've always watched has always been the unrated extended cut that they have that has like the original, I get like the original intention that they say of being pretty violent, but it does get, I mean, it obviously looks fake by nowadays standards. It looks like just a giant like red paintball blows up in their face, but it is just constantly like apes getting shot in the face for a solid like 20 minutes.
I mean, even before that, the guy that with the flamethrower, and he's clearly like torching apes, and then
they light him on fire. I think it is Caesar Caesar grabs him and lights him on fire.
Sneaks up on him. He doesn't see him because he's stupid, or I mean, maybe the blocking wasn't the greatest, but he sneaks up on him, attacks him, gets the flamethrower and burns the guy to death. Yeah, it's kind of weird because it's like, who's this movie for? I guess sci-fi buffs. It feels like a movie that everyone would take their kids to go see.
Oh yeah. Well, that's why they re-edited it. In the end, that's why they cut everything for the theatrical release, because that's exactly what the producers said. Like, people were taking their children, and they said they had test screenings somewhere, and they said, yeah, by the end of the movie, like, people were like taking their kids out because the kids were like screaming and crying because it's like the apes are getting shot in the face. And
I'm only thinking about it because it's the 20th anniversary. But could you imagine if you saw Shrek and it ended with Shrek getting shot in the face and like everyone just gets brutally murdered at the end?
Might be a better movie. Who knows? We could have got that version. But yeah, that's like the only difference between those two cuts is like all that violence is taken out. And then the way they play the end scene of.
Well, what about his keeper? Is he supposed to be the same guy, the same circus owner from the third movie?
Yeah.
Okay. This is where I was going to say where they get
what
this,
other like, circus owner would it be?
Is it the same actor?
Yeah, it's Ricardo Montalban. Okay.
Your favorite.
Yeah.
He gets interrogated because he stands up for being like, oh, I said that line about humans. And they said, well, that doesn't make sense. He's like, I said inhumane, not humans. You misheard me when I didn't say anything at all, but you still misheard me. And they had this crazy 1984 technology where it's just like, I like the simplicity of it. It's literally a light that they put you under and it makes you tell the truth. And instead of saying the truth, he jumps out a window, or maybe it's more of an accident. I don't really know. There's a scuffle and he ends up going out the window. And that's the moment that sets Caesar down this like path of anger, because he knows about his parents. He knows what happens to them. He knows how his entire race is being treated. And the last human that he had any sort of real connection to is gone. And I think it's McDonald that has a line that says something about humans. I think it's when they're down and when he's trying to help Caesar, you know, get a head start getting away from the, you know, the humans. he says something about, like, not all humans are bad. And Caesar's like, most of them are, you know, most of them are awful. There's a few good. Yeah, there's a few good ones, but the majority, nah, they all deserve to go. But yeah. And then also the scene where they have him captured him and they're trying to get him to talk. So they're electrocuting him. That it's 1984. They loved that book and they said, that's what we're going to apply to Planet of the Apes, this movie. And I really like when McDonald goes down and he shuts off the power for it. And Caesar realizes that he's not getting electrocuted anymore, but he fakes it, and then he's able to get away, and I guess he murders that guy. I don't know. There's a lot of movies where they smack somebody on the back of the head, and they fall down. I'm like, are they dead? Did they knock them out? I don't think I could knock anybody out slapping them in the back of the head. It's movie magic. Unless I concuss them, and then they're probably dead. But it's like that movie where they just, like, they weakly slap somebody, and the person passes out, like, ah! But yeah, he gets electrocuted and says, I'm done with this shit. A lot of bad things happen to him.
Yep. Then it's time for Ape Revolution. They take them all, take all the police down, take the army down, just pretty much go through and wreck everything. And yeah, that's a great final moment with him, like, giving his speech. It was funny because they showed the picture of, or the footage of the way they edited the part at the end when he's giving his speech about, you know, humans don't deserve to rule, you know, we'll... Basically, the apes are taking over. And the executives wanted him to have, like, not necessarily a more positive message, but they wanted him to say that if the apes rule, they would be a much kinder ruler than humans ever were. And the way they did that in post-production was they just zoomed in on Roddy McDowell's eyes. So the scene is literally just Caesar's eyes for like a solid 2 minutes while he's giving voiceover, and his eyes just keep like looking back and forth. And I was like, I guess that's one way to save yourself from having to reshoot the whole scene.
Yeah, I think for the most part, the makeup, It is, I mean, obviously a step up from the gorilla in Escape. For some reason, the gorillas are still kind of, they get the shittiest makeup in this movie.
I think it's because that's probably a costume that most places just already have around. Like, no one has an orangutan suit. No one probably has chimpanzee suits. So it's probably the easiest thing of, hey, we're going to need a bunch of gorillas in this. And they're like, ugh, we can't make 500 gorilla suits. Still get some, maybe go to a better party store than you went to for the last film. But there's a moment that they talk about it in the documentary for Battle, but it's not specific to that film. They just talk about how they keep reusing, like, basically how the budget kept going down for every film. Like, it started out like $6 million for the first Planet of the Apes, and by the time they got to even Conquest, it was already down to like $1.2 million or something like that.
There's definitely a character I need to talk about in Battle that I felt like the makeup was just like, what the fuck,
guys? Well, yeah, you can get to that, but yeah, they just kept reusing all the props, like the chairs that the governor sits in when he's at the slave auction are the exact chairs from the spaceship in the first Planet of the Apes film. And like most of the costumes are the same. So they definitely did keep just reusing every prop. They pretty much said that they did not make any new ape prosthetics after the first film. They just kept reusing the same old ones. So I think they did get to a point where they only had so many to go around. And if you were in the background, you just got like a plain gorilla suit. And even if you were like even close to the foreground, it was still like, you're just getting a plain gorilla suit. We can't make more.
Well, the most prominent gorilla, the one that lights the lighter, his face is like poorly painted, like all black. And it's like, I mean, you can tell that he's a gorilla. So bare minimum, fine. But I don't fault the movie for the drop in production, because they do remain creative. If this is all on the Fox lot, they did a good job of making everything still feel very dystopian. Caesar running across the bridge and then hiding under the stairs and still getting caught. Like, everything, it does feel very futuristic. And the cops that don't really look anything crazy, and I mean, they're disguised, most of the monkeys, because they have them in jumpsuits, so they only have to really do faces and hands, you know. I think they wear shoes and shit, so like you still don't see their feet, so it's like the bare minimum of what makeup that they need that they have. And clearly they go all out for him because he's the one that you see the most prominent. But there were still scenes where I was wishing that it's a cheat, though. It's after the fact. I mean, the movie's done, but it's something that you see when the movie's made. But there's a moment where the circus owner is talking to him about how he has to act like an ape. On the production side, it's not the greatest conversation, because they have it once he's broken into the like when he's in the place where he's supposed to be dropped off. And I'm like, you think this would be a discussion anytime at all before they got there? But they're talking about how he needs to start walking and acting like an ape. And I wished when they had them, when they were actually kind of revolting and the apes had their guns and they were marching, I kind of wished that he just walked with like normal posture, because I felt like he would normally have that good posture and he was like faking it. And I feel like it would have a pretty cool moment of like he's something special. He's something different than the other ones.
Yeah, but even the apes in the first movie don't completely walk upright. They still kind of walk different. At least the chimps seem to. I don't know, the gorillas a little bit. The orangutans might be the ones that kind of seem to be like have the most human-like, I don't know, appearance, or the way that they go about things, even in that first movie. So can't get too crazy. Oh, I'm
primarily
there.
Going off of the actual lines in the script.
I know what you're saying, but
like. Yeah, they're kind of safe by what has happened in the previous movies for sure. At the same time, you're teaching him to be more monkey-like very early on in the film, but beyond talking and stuff. He is way smart. I do like how smart he actually is, and maybe it kind of falls back on the actor, but all the little subtle things, like when they're teaching him how to pour the drinks, it seems that he is smarter and more well aware of everything that's going on around him than, say, Charlton Heston in the first movie, that just seems confused as hell about everything. He's like, are those apes? Like, you know, I mean, he doesn't say that because he can't talk when he first sees them, but I'm paraphrasing.
No, I'm pretty sure that's a direct line from the first film is, are those apes?
I think it's the second movie where he says, Brent says that.
Brent probably does have a line. Yeah, I think when
Nova takes him back to Ape City, he's like sitting there
watching the council, and he's like, "Yeah, it's just like something when he's just like
he had that line. Well, what am I supposed to say to a gorilla?
Talking apes.
What am I supposed to say to a gorilla? They're beneath me, I guess. Yeah, I mean, so far with all the movies of the original saga of ape movies, all five of them. I won't get into any like plot details. Even the worst ones. Which is maybe for me, Battle, maybe Beneath. I like Conquest a lot. I would hold Conquest pretty high with Escape and the original. Beneath's not terrible. I think they do a good job working against Charlton Heston and doing everything that they needed to make that movie work.
Yeah, Beneath at least still had. I think the only thing it really has working for it is that they still had a decent budget for that film. Like I really, when you get to Battle, which obviously we'll get to when we talk in that episode, but the lack of budget is where that's the movie where it really starts to show that they just don't have a budget like at all for anything.
Right. And when you get there too, it's not a terrible movie. It's sort of like, I think in my mind when I watch it, and we'll go into exact details on that next episode, but when you watch it, you feel like the script works really well in favor of the fact that they have zero, they don't have a budget at all. And they kind of take like a more low scale approach for most of it. I mean, that stuff's the better things in this movie than the big things, but they do try to bring it back full circle. And there's something really creative about this franchise with each entry, but Conquest, I don't see. That's the reason I brought up the fact that this is the unrated version that I watched, or the director's vision, is because maybe if I did see it in theaters and I was watching 2 minutes of Caesar's Eyes and it ended kind of happy, I'd be like, what? And it would probably be way down farther on my list. But I would say that this is probably very close to Escape. If it's not better, it's like it's a hair behind it for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think those are the two best. I do go back and forth because they are such vastly different films that it's kind of hard to sit there and compare them side by side to say like which one I like better. The first Escape obviously has that lighter tone, and it's a more fun movie overall until the end when it starts to become very unfun and you have to watch baby chimps murdered and your two favorite characters get shot very violently. And then I really don't know what else you would expect from following that ending and then going straight into this film. I don't know what you'd expect other than super dark, like Caesar hates all humans or most humans because of what happened to his parents. But
maybe the worst is too, because the world blows up completely at the end, but of happy endings, technically Battle, but we didn't get into it yet. So up to this point, the happiest ending goes to the original, because the apes go back to their city and Charlton Heston is at home, you know, and he's got a woman, like he's got everything that he wants, I guess. He's just mad about apes. He's just pissed off about the apes.
He's just a little upset about them.
But yeah, the world ends. All the apes die. The apes are, this is a literal uprising where they had to resort to violence to escape slavery. I do think, though, when we get move into the current trilogy that is, you know, from the last 10 years, they take the best ideas from Conquest and Battle, and they form them into pretty unique movies of their own. I think that they basically do what I did while I watched the movie and thought, well, that could be better, or that could be better. And the things that actually make it into the movie, such as Lisa, the love interest. These names, I think these names are so funny to me. What's a good name? What's a good name for Caesar's love interest? Lisa. She screams no. So it's like they're you know, they take that into context of, well, I guess it keeps happening again and again, but that carries over into Battle. And it carries over strongly into Rise, which is good. I think there's kind of a respect for them. But yeah, I do. I really do like all of these movies. Even when they don't work 100%, for the most part, I think they're pretty creative about what they have to do. The story's creative. They get to work around small things. Occasionally, they drop the ball. And then you have to work with these sets that what we are the Fox Lot and these costumes that they don't have any... You said that they haven't updated, or that they've, you know, at the very least, they tweaked them and they fixed them. They repainted them, but they didn't really remold them or do anything crazy like that. And they can only really carry over one. Nobody ever wants to fucking do the makeup for any of these movies. They're except Roddy McDowall. So anytime somebody's a villain, for the most part, they're not in any sort of costume. But yeah, these are highly, highly enjoyable. If you're listening to this without having watched any of them, that Blu-ray box set that probably came out 10 years ago, I think it's the same one that me and Chuck has, and maybe they've reissued it already for something else, is perfect. It's a good way to get into it, and then you have the unrated versions for like the last two films, or the extended version.
That's definitely worth getting into. I don't think anybody could be disappointed going into the Planet of the Apes films. They do some very unique and interesting things. Like you said, the creativity of working within the budgets that they have definitely shows through, and you know, some of the ideas they come up with and the way they tackle certain issues without having to, you know, present it in a way that would get it even more censored or just not even get released. I think it works pretty well, and this is definitely a good one.
Hey, Ross Serling figured it out. If it's sci-fi, people ignore you for some reason. You can put any theme into it whatsoever. When they see monkeys, talking monkeys, you know what? No one gives a shit what's happening in this movie anymore. We can talk about any theme that we want to talk about. We can use any tone that we want to use.
Just do whatever you want. Nobody will even notice.
Yeah, I mean, the only people that would not like this movie are people that aren't into, like, heavy science fiction. Like, if you're taken out of the movie by talking apes, then... Or you can't take somebody seriously that is dressed up in an ape costume. You know, then I think that you're fine if you can ignore those things.
I feel like that's anybody if you can't get past, like... The same people that couldn't get past talking apes, it's like, can you even watch the original... Star Wars? Do the Ewoks make you uncomfortable? You can't watch that film either. Ugh. Tiny bears in a forest? Nah, I can't believe this.
Maybe. I do like when people have a very strong opinion about things like that, and then things that they're okay with versus the things that they're not. But we're game for anything. But yeah, this, I think the thing that you might find most surprising about the series if you go in blind is that they're all quite enjoyable. They don't have any sort of, they don't get like super bland like some series do. I mean, maybe at the very end, but it's not even that bad. So, and that's Battle for the Planet of the Apes, which we will be talking about on Friday, a couple days from today. This is our second full week of apes, third week altogether, but second week with two apes. Pretty exciting. Thank you for listening to another episode of Cinema d'Amore, where we dive into the Planet of the Apes. I am Justin Morgan.
Chuck Phillips.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks.
We're Cinema Demore. Thank you for listening to our Planet of the Apes episodes. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It'd be greatly appreciated if you would subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.